Good morning, everybody. Hi, my name is Martin Woodward. Thanks for coming early this morning. I know it's one of the first couple of sessions of the morning, so we'll try and keep everything interesting for you today. This is how to get hold of me. My name is Martin Woodward. Email address, martinwoo@microsoft.com. Twitter and the blog and things. If after this recording and after this week you're really infused and want to nerd out with Team Foundation Server, then I actually do a TFS podcast where we talk every couple of weeks about Team Foundation Server. It's a little bit hardcore, so don't worry if you don't subscribe to that one, but for the really keen you can. Okay. I work on the Visual Studio team in Microsoft. I actually work on Team Foundation Server, or hopefully we're going to be talking about here today. And I wrote a couple of books as well. Not that that's a blatant plug, I just know some experts if you ever need to know anything, but we'll get past those. Okay. I live in Northern Ireland, not too far away, about an hour. My commute here this week was faster than quite a lot of people's commute from other places in the Netherlands, so it's a very easy travel for me. But my team, and there's a view, sorry, from where I live literally in a field. In Northern Ireland. They did give me a desk when I joined Microsoft, but you know, that's where I live, that's the view from my front door. It rains a lot. But that's where my desk is. In fact, just over here, you see there in the little corner? I'll show you over here as well. I'm probably using my mouse there. Just, you know, it's a bit desolate. That's where my... That there is like an old World War I battleship that's sort of rusting in a dry dock. This is a film set. This is where the film Game of Thrones, you know, the TV show? And then, see that hole there in the ground? That hole, don't let this worry you, but that hole's actually where they built the Titanic. So, you know, that's where I'm building Team Foundation Server. That's where they build the Titanic. It was fine when we last touched it, is all I'm going to say. You know, it was good. So don't let it worry. Anyway, I work from home, because it's a much nicer place than that. Well, most of my team live in North Carolina on the east coast of the United States. That's where half of the Team Foundation Server team live. And then the other half of the Team Foundation Server team live in Seattle, obviously, in Redmond. And our Team Foundation Server for the division, for the Visual Studio division, is actually there in Building 41. On campus, just behind the canteen. If you ever want to, you know, have lunch there, you can check out our server. It's quite a big server. It supports 3,500 people, 17 terabytes of data. You know, it's a fairly big TFS instance. I say my server was there. My team, the team I work on, we're so distributed. We actually have people in India and China as well on my team. And we're such a distributed team, we actually use... the cloud. We use TFS Preview as our server. So my source code, my work items, my builds, they're all stored on tfspreview.com, and I use that for, we call it dog fooding in Microsoft. It's a horrible term, but we use TFS Preview every single day. My team, I'm proud to say, are one of the most demanding teams, one of the most demanding accounts on TFS Preview. So if there's something ever going wrong with TFS Preview, then we're the first to scream. And because we live, you know, next to the people who also are running TFS Preview, they tend to hear us scream quite soon. So hopefully we're finding problems before anybody else sees them, but we have plenty of monitoring to make sure that we notice problems quick. So we use tfspreview.com. We've been using tfspreview.com since, it was early last year was when we moved over and started dog fooding, a long time before we opened the doors to the public. And who builds websites here? Who does web development? Okay, a fair few of you. There's something really exciting about, you know, you've been building a website in the dark, you've been building, you've been testing it, you think everything's good, and it's time to switch it on and turn it live, you know? And there's this nervous excitement. You're hoping people are going to come. But then again, you're also hoping they're not all going to come at once because, you know, you've done some load testing on your site, but you're never quite sure how your site's going to behave when you switch it on. Our first public announcement of TFS Preview was back in September 2001. This is actually a picture I took. Sorry for it being blurry. It was just taken with my phone, you know. It was quite late for me, and I was sort of shaking because it was a bit nervous. And this is what happens. While there's a big keynote going up on stage, this is my boss, Jason Zander, doing a keynote. I do a lot of cross-platform development. That's why you can see I'm actually streaming the keynote onto my Mac there. While over here on my laptop, which is exactly this machine here, I've got the site up with some monitoring stuff we have. Obviously, you know, with Microsoft, all fancy Metro tiles and things, even in our monitoring software. And I was, you know, watching the site, and there on the piece of paper, I have a checklist of things we're going through to enable and switch on, you know, as we're enabling it. Now, that was the first big public one we did, obviously quite nervous. My team uses Scrum to develop Team Foundation Server. We have 3-week sprints. So every 3 weeks, we have a potentially shippable increment. Well, what does potentially shippable mean? Well, we like to know if it works or not, and if it's better than the last one, if the features work. Best way of doing that is we ship it every 3 weeks. So every 3 weeks, at least, there is a brand new sprint's worth of work appearing up on tfspreview.com that is the result of our previous sprint. So we're constantly innovating, constantly deploying. We actually, sometimes when we detect problems, you know, we're deploying to TFS Preview multiple times per day if we have to, if we're noticing a performance issue or we're noticing an issue elsewhere on the site. We do sometimes do deployments multiple times a day, but the big deployments are every 3 weeks. And that was quite a big change inside Microsoft, going from shipping a box product every 2 to 3 years. Not that I'm giving you any dates here as to when the next release is coming out, I promise. But yeah, roughly every 2 to 3 years. Trying to run Scrum in a team that ships once every 2 to 3 years is difficult, because you want to get feedback from customers. And so we're very keen on trying to find ways of changing our business so we can get lots of good feedback and iterate quickly with customers. And TFS Preview is a vitally important way we know how good the software is that we're building. But the important thing is TFS Preview is the same version of Team Foundation Server that you get on the media and install, you know, on-premise as well. It's the same code. There's a couple of if statements that say, you know, if in Azure, then use Azure Blob Storage, because that's a bit cheaper than using a SQL storage for storing of files. Whereas on-premise, inside your firewall, it's just easier to store everything in the SQL database, because hard disks cost the same on-premise, and it's just easier to back up that way. But no, we deploy every 3 weeks. We like to know if we're getting better, and we get a huge amount of value in improving Team Foundation Server. And I think people who've tried Team Foundation Server at the beta stage and at the release candidate stage, the feedback we're getting is that it's a very high quality release, and you know, lots of the usual performance issues and usual pain points you see aren't there in the beta and release candidate. They're more about getting feedback on features, which is great. So, why did we go to the cloud? What's in it for you for the cloud? Well, the first one is the getting started experience. Who's installed Team Foundation Server before? Raise your hands. Who enjoyed installing Team Foundation Server? Okay, that's why we're going to the cloud. Yeah, we don't want to have to put you through the pain of having to, I mean, Team Foundation Server in 2012, don't get me wrong. It's a much better install experience than it's ever been, you know, next in a wizard if you want it to be. Or if you want a more advanced configuration, you can do all that sort of stuff. We don't want any barrier of entry to people using source control and work item tracking and build automation. The reason I get up in the morning to do software development is because our goal is to make the software development profession a better place, a more productive place, one with higher quality. And so we just want to make it as easy as possible for people to use source control and work item tracking and build automation. So let's get rid of having to install TFS. For a team like me that has people spread around the world, it's actually really useful being in the cloud. You know, that's a grand term. Our server's actually in a, you know, It's in a shipping container just outside Chicago, but that's the cloud, so there we go. And by being in the cloud, everybody has fabulous internet access locally often, but quite often have terrible corporate wide area network access or VPN access and things. Often their internet access is great, but their wide area network is always less than their internet access. So by being in the cloud and hosting your source code in the cloud and your builds in the cloud, everybody on these remote sites, everybody working, you know, around the globe can connect in very, very easily. Now there are some downsides of being in the cloud, obviously, which is your organization comfortable with storing its family jewels, its source code, its bugs, its features in the cloud? Are you comfortable with that at all? Are you able to do that legally? Is your industry protected that means it's not allowed to do this sort of thing? If that's the case, we still have Team Foundation Server to install locally. It's the same product. We're always going to be shipping software in boxes to install locally. It's the way we make money. So don't worry, it's not going away. But if you want a greater flexibility, then here we have it. Operationally, we have a team of, you know, four guys that look after tfspreview.com, distributed across, you know, the hundreds of thousands of accounts that are doing it. So our operational costs are significantly reduced by having to maintain, you know, we're maintaining these servers, so we can pass on those operational costs to you in terms of how we end up charging for Team Foundation's server in the cloud. We haven't announced pricing models yet for TFS Preview. We're not ready to announce pricing yet, basically because we haven't figured it out. It'll be competitive, but we need to do a bunch of work before we're going to enable billing. And we need to make sure you can get data in and out of the cloud. And there's lots of things to happen before we actually figure out, you know, how much we're going to charge for this thing. It'll be competitive. And then I mentioned already the faster delivery cycle. We iterate every 3 weeks as opposed to every 2 to 3 years. Now, we are going to be shipping updates to Team Foundation Server more often than you've seen in the past within the 2012 release. But those updates, you still have to install them yourselves, you know, and again, it should be a smooth process, but if you're installing them locally, there's friction and quite often you get behind with installing updates and things. We ship it every 3 weeks, guaranteed, new build. We're always iterating. And we have a few features which we'd quite like to enable in the future, like hybrid models between your private TFS and public data and things like that, which having a cloud infrastructure around TFS will really help us for. We're not really ready to talk about those yet, in terms of what they might be. We're not even built them yet, but we know strategically it's where we want to go for even the people who want an on-premise TFS server. Important thing to mention, TFS Preview, you have to use Live ID, you have to use a federated internet ID, Live ID, to authenticate with TFS Preview. You also, today, cannot customize your work item tracking, you know, your process templates in TFS. You can't customize those particularly as much as you can customize them in an on-premise TFS instance. The reason is we upgrade every 3 weeks. We want to upgrade your processes every 3 weeks and give you the latest and greatest features. Therefore, we restrict that so we can keep everybody upgraded. However, if you want a model where you know how much it's going to cost you because, you know, you want a commercial SLA, somebody who's not in preview mode, somebody who can be more flexible with you, can provide you some services as well as TFS hosting. Then we have a vibrant partner community that offer TFS hosting solutions, and it's actually growing. If you go to aka.ms/TFS hosting, you'll get the latest list of people who you can get hosted TFS solutions for. If you don't want to have to install TFS and look after it, but you want some additional flexibility and customization that we don't offer in Microsoft. And we'll continue to support our hosting business and our hosting providers. Okay. Now, I've got some slides to talk about some other points, but we're going to spend most of the rest of this time in demos playing with stuff. People have got questions. People want to see things. Please put your hand up and we'll go through it. As you noticed, I'm not a sales guy. I'm a developer. I'm not particularly a formal guy. So please just interrupt and we'll make it interactive, especially this early in the morning. Okay. So let's have a play. First things first, The last sprint, we rolled out a new welcome experience. So this is the shiny welcome experience, you know, and proud. I do a lot of cross-platform development, as I say, so quite proud on the opening page. It's, you know, Eclipse and Visual Studio talking to things like Android and iOS and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's all just to highlight the fact that it is cross-platform. It's not just Visual Studio. And you can come in here and learn all about it. You can go to pricing where it kind of says, oh, we don't know, really. Yeah. I don't know. Sorry. Anyway. More importantly, the Learn tab is actually quite useful. You go in here and go through and learn all about your code, learn how to do things from Visual Studio, or you can go over and look at the Eclipse side if you wanted to, learn all about how to do things with Eclipse and set up builds and so on and so forth. So that's actually quite good. Don't go there now, otherwise you'll spoil all my you'll spoil all the good parts and good material in my talk. So, but most importantly, get started for free. Who's got an account with TFS Preview already? Oh, fantastic. Who uses it every day? Okay. Who just got one because it was free and they thought they'd better grab it quick? Well, yeah, okay. For the rest of you, go here, but don't do it right now, just in case, you know. The demand, it can normally handle quite a lot of people creating accounts at one time, but let's not jinx it. Had enough fun when I realized the internet wasn't working at the start of the week. I was, my session on Thursday's going to be fun if they don't fix that before now. So let's create a quick account for us. So we'll say TE2012. Let's see if we can create that one. Okay, we'll hit create and see what happens. Fingers crossed. Now, as I mentioned, it uses Live ID, so I'm going to log in with my Live ID. This is my personal Live ID I'm using here. I can't actually talk and type passwords at the same time, otherwise I'll say what my password is. So there we go. Okay. So I'm going to sign in to Live, come in here, and it's going to create me an account. Now, what it's going to do is provision a virtual machine, you know, get everything set up, do what you would do to install TFS, set up databases, set up the linking, install the product, create all the different links, blah, blah, blah. Normally, that would take you what? Normally, it would take you longer than that just to find the media to install TFS. But here we go. It's already gone up, and it's installed you a private TFS instance. First thing that's very important, if you go and look, there is your the account URL. You see? The tfspreview.com account URL. So this thing here, don't forget that. That's the bit you need to be able to tell everybody how to get connected. Previously, we actually had some feedback that people kept losing their account addresses. And we went, oh, yeah, good point. So we've added a page to the Getting Started experience now where you can actually go and find your account URLs and things like that. That's all there once you're logged in. So well, let's remember that. In fact, I'm just going to copy-paste that and put that in my clipboard so I don't forget it, because that's about the only thing I need to remember throughout the rest of today. And then the next thing you're going to do is create a team project. So this is a project for your team to work in. So let's hit this, and we'll start. We'll kick it off, and I'll explain more about what a team project is. So we'll say, we'll call this Contoso. You notice you can pick a template. We ship with three out of the box. You can only pick one of these three in TFS Preview today. So the Scrum one, or the Agile one, or SimMI. Scrum's good, and the default one, it's the one I use. It's a, even if you don't use actual Scrum, it's still a decent process template to use. So I'm going to hit Create Project. A team project is a project for your team to work in. It's bigger than a single solution file. You know, you could have multiple solutions inside a team project. It's the project for your team. So if you have a team of people that, you know, you've got five, six guys that are just working on lots of different projects and have lots of different requirements and have to manage work between them, then all those projects would probably live in one team project because that's where the team resources are managed. If you wanted, you can have as many people in your team project as you like. You just add team members. I'll show you how to do that in a second. There's no limits into who you add. So they don't all have to create TFS preview accounts. You as an administrator of that account would create it, and then you would add team members to come and help you play, you know, develop the software. Oh, there we go. It's created. And your team is when you ship software frequently, you occasionally get to slip in little cheeky messages like your team is going to love this. There we go. Great. So let's hope they do. So we'll navigate to the project and we'll go to the project homepage. This is a full version of Team Foundation Server. It has all the agile features enabled. It has all the feedback enabled. It's connected to email. It's all there. So now it's pretty blank because we haven't done anything. So the first thing you probably want to do, actually, is come in and, you know, you probably give yourself a nice shiny picture. There you go. There's one when I was a little bit thinner. So you add a picture to yourself. You go to Manage Profile and do that. And then the next thing you want to do is probably add some team members. So we'll just come here and we'll add some team members in. So let's come in here and we'll add my boss. Well, might as well. So anybody wants to send Jason Zander some personal mail, here you go, jlzander@hotmail.com. Here we go. And then let's also add one of my friends, Brian Keller. Anyone go to his foundational session? Brian Keller's? It's a good, if you haven't catched it, then FDN03. If you go up to Channel 9, it's there already. You can go and you know, watch any sessions you've seen here this week. They're all recorded. While we're here, I might as well add, you know, Brian. Notice, you don't have to just have, you know, I've got hotmail.com and as there. You can have live IDs. My live ID is a woodwardweb.com account, which is where I am. You can have live IDs anywhere. So let's add the big guy and let's add BillG@Microsoft.com while we're here, just to prove that as well. Hopefully it won't send him too much emails when the builds break. Otherwise I might be getting a phone call. Okay. So there we go. I've added some people in. And we'll notice when it comes up that actually, because Jason and Brian are active users on TFS Preview, they've already set up their accounts, and so it's pulled in their photos. But I know Bill Gates is busy giving his money away and saving the world, so he hasn't been on TFS Preview, it looks like, yet. So I have to get him. I have to get him on, see what he's doing. There we go. So we've got our team set up. And then the next thing we want to do is let's put some source code in it. Now, currently, today, the only way of putting source code into Team Foundation Service Preview is to check it in, is to just push a new version up. You can't actually migrate a project with history from your on-premise Team Foundation Server into the cloud. That's one of the features we want to build and we will ship, but we figured it was more important that we work on the features that we want to ship in the box with TFS 2012. Before we do things that are more cloud scenarios, like enabling pushing of code up from on-premise to TFS. Hank? The question is, does the integration platform work? That's a great question. So integration platform is an open source project we have that allows you to copy data between Team Foundation Server instances. That actually does work. It's not easy to get set up, but my team actually uses it. When we initially started on TFS Preview, we set up a mirror between our on-premise and our hosted server just to be safe, because, you know, we were trusting the hosted team. We've actually switched that off now, and we're constantly in TFS Preview. Question. The question is, will it be possible to choose a data center? Yes is the answer. Currently, it actually forces all accounts to get created either in, it's either the central US or the east US is one of which it's getting created in. When we go again, before we go live, one of the things we want to build is the ability to be able to pick your data center, especially if you want to get like you know, Dublin to be able to have to keep it in the EU. Then we will be able to do that, but you can't right now. Again, we very much focused our development on let's work on the features that are going to ship in both on-premise TFS and TFS in the cloud first, so that we can get plenty of feedback and benefit our box product first, and then we can build the more specialized cloud features, like billing, for example. Billing we don't need in on-premise, but yeah, we need to build a system that accepts credit cards and things like that. We haven't even started building that yet, so we need to go do that quickly. Yeah, don't tell anyone. Okay. Great questions, thank you. So we're going to go check in this code into TFS. This is the people who were here early saw me create this. This is just a standard MVC4 ASP.NET application, you know, right-click, new project, create. This is the laptop they give to developers, you know, it's just a spinning Rust hard drive. It's not one of the fancy SSD hard drives you see at the keynotes. So it takes a little while to create, so I did that before we started. But I'm just going to come in here and add it to source control. So I'm going to add my server in. You can see all, I've been practicing on this a lot, so you can see all the other servers have got there waiting previously. So there we go, we'll add our server address in, which was that URL I told you not to forget. And then here's where we hope everything's still working on the internet. There we go. Okay, yep, that's added. And then we hit close, and then it's going to connect, see our project collection, and see Contoso, that team project that we created. So let's connect to that. And then because I'd already logged in using LiveID in the website, it's cached my credentials. If I hadn't already logged into the website, it would actually pop up a dialogue that would ask me for my LiveID at this point, you know, so I could log in. I'll maybe show you that from Eclipse in a moment. So we come in here. Top tip, you could just dump this in Contoso Hello World, but my advice to everybody is just create a folder, call it main, and check it into there. Trust me, we're not going to talk much about branching and merging here today, well, at all. It'll make your life easier if you do that, trust me. And then if you ever want to do branching and merging later, you'll thank me for giving you that top tip. If you never do, you haven't lost anything. So just create a folder called main, stick it in there, hit OK. And that's actually going to go and check in the code into TFS. So if I go to my, this is the new, you know, Visual Studio pending changes view. Ooh, things have, when it comes back from being grey. It probably is actually. Yeah, there we go. This is the pending changes view. And if we go here, the reason I picked a MVC project is it creates a bunch of files for you. You know, 218 files by default. So it's quite a good sample with some GIFs and things and PNGs. So let's check that in. Initial version, hit check in, and off we go. That's going to upload all those versions into cloud. Now we're here in Amsterdam. Amsterdam has pretty good internet, so this is very fast here. The experience I get from home is equally good. The experience I've had all around the world has been pretty amazing. The ping times to Azure are, say, you know, from Europe, maybe 200 milliseconds. But actually, Team Foundation Server works really well over high latency networks. And it actually works well over low bandwidth networks as well. But if you're uploading big files, then obviously, you know, you have to transfer those bits over the wire. But the latency actually doesn't affect the performance of TFS much. And the Azure data center has just got unbelievable bandwidth. You know, it's just unbelievable. So there we go, that's checked in. So now I have my project. It's in the cloud. There we go, we're to the cloud. So if I go into Source Control Explorer over here, just going to hit refresh quickly, and we'll actually, oh no, it's already appeared. There's the main folder there, and then inside that is my Hello World TE. So, fantastic. And then all the stuff, you know, this is just TFS. It just happens to be in the cloud. So if I go, I can just come in and, you know, do usual version control stuff. So let's, so there's the home controller. Let's open up the home controller test. Controllers, where are we? Tests here. Ba 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 ba, home controller tests. And let's just do, you know, let's modify this. Being a good boy, I'll modify my unit test first. Here we are. Hello, TechEd. There we go. Now, I used to be a consultant, so I'll hit Control C. And then over here, Control V. There we go. Let's make sure I don't make any mistakes. There we go. Fantastic. Hello, TechEd. Great. So I made a quick change. And then obviously I can check that into TFS. So let's go here. I could right-click on the solution and say right-click, check in. That would take me. Or I could go to Team Explorer here, go to my pending changes view, and there are the files that I'm editing. So it's just Team Foundation Server. It builds up a list of the files that you're editing, and then you can check them in a single transaction. Team, this we're talking to is a Team Foundation Server 2012 instance. It's actually, you know, we shipped RC, oh, whenever we shipped it, I forget now. Seems like a long time ago. Legacy code. We shipped RC whenever we shipped it. We've had several sprints since then, so this is actually a version of Team Foundation Server that's a lot more recent than we shipped in the RC. This is closer to RTM, probably, than it is to RC. So we're talking to this latest version of the server. So it has all the features of TFS 2012. If I, one of the great ones that I like, and that's especially useful for web projects, is local workspaces. So you know, previously in Team Foundation Server, if you edit, if you check out files, if you do a get, then all the files are read-only locally, and you have to explicitly check them out. Well, that's gone. in Team Foundation Server 2012. By default, it creates what's called a local workspace. So if I open my web config file here in Notepad and just start typing, hit Control. Let's make this a bit smaller because I want to show you this because this is actually slightly magic. Let's go back, sorry, to Team Explorer. Yep. So there we go, list of files, 1, 2. I hit Control S and instantly it notices I've edited my file. If I come back here and delete that and hit Control S, he says, it notices I haven't edited my file. So, you know, it's just basically, it just does what you expect. If you add a GIF or a PNG, which is very, very common in the web, you know, you'll just get emailed some graphics files from your graphic designer, you copy-paste them over the top of some existing graphic files, maybe you've added some graphics, maybe some removed, it detects those changes and just puts them there for you. So it just works. The version control model in 2012 is hugely improved. If you like the old way, where you have to explicitly check out files and you like that additional control, because that does give you additional communication, because if I'm editing a web config and my colleague is editing web config, then with what's called a server workspace, which is how TFS 2010 used to work, it actually warns you that you're editing the same files at the same time. With a local workspace, which is the default in TFS 2012, it never talks to the server when you edit the file, so it can't give you that warning. But, you know, pros and cons. So you pick the type you like, and you can stick to it. You can swap between them as well. Just some, again, this is supposed to be a level 200 session, but just some how things work, because, again, I'm a developer. I like to know these things, as do you guys. If you noticed, I switched on view hidden folders. And if you know, at the root of my workspace, it actually creates a $TF folder on Windows. And that's where all the state is stored of the workspace. If you see that hidden folder, don't delete it. That's where all the data is. Okay? You can recover, but it takes you a little while. So best to not have hidden folders switched on. That's where all the state is. Notice it just creates one $TF folder. It doesn't pollute your entire source tree with TF folders. It just creates one. It's called $TF on Windows because Windows doesn't particularly like files and folders that begin with a period, with a dot. But over on the Unix systems, when you're using Team Foundation Server from the Mac or from Linux, it actually creates it with a .tf because that's what the Unix guys, that's the default over there. And so we respect the platforms we're on, but we work across platforms. Fantastic. So that's version control. So let's just do a quick check-in. I've edited my web config in Notepad, so we'll just say made a few changes. I don't have to leave a comment. I just like leaving comments. Right. The next thing I want to do is, that's version control. It's hard to demo because it's just TFS, you know? It's the same product. So let's go over to web access, speaking of things that are just TFS, and let's open up the web portal for my team. And we're going to go do some sprint planning now. To show you some of the agile features that come in Team Foundation Server, and they're fully supported in the cloud. So the first thing I'm going to do is configure a quick schedule for my iterations. So we run in 3-week sprints normally. For the sake of this demo, let's run in 1-week sprints, just so we can, you know, do some stuff. So I'm going to create here, let's start today. We're in sprint planning. Let's finish in a week's time on the 5th, and then we'll hit save and close. Now, I mentioned we iterate frequently. One of the bits of feedback we got, because everyone, you're allowed to use TFS Preview, even though it's in preview mode, i.e. we're not charging you for it, and we're changing things. People are allowed to use it for production projects, and we encourage people to use it for production projects, because that gives us really, really good feedback as to what features we should do. And one of the bits of feedback we got was setting these dates was a bit tiresome. So we made some improvements because of the feedback we got to TFS Preview, which we've then included in, this will be included in RTM, the feature I'm about to show you now. So I hit Set Dates, I click on the Start Date button, and it automatically picks the day after my last sprint finished. You know, simple stuff, but by rolling this out into production, we were actually able to get that feedback and tweak it and improve the product. So I'll go, oh, that looks good. And look at that, it magically went, well, the last sprint was a week long, therefore, you probably want this sprint to be a week long as well. So it just works. And that, again, was just a small iterative improvement based on the feedback we were given from people using TFS Preview in production. I noticed as well there, it actually realized that I'm working I don't like to work weekends by default, and so it's not going to start a sprint on a Saturday, so it does it again. Perfect. That made setting my sprint dates a lot easier. So now I've got my sprint dates set up, the next thing I want to do is look at my product backlog. So I'm going to go here to view backlog. I won't have much in it yet because we just created this team project a second ago. So come in here. Again, I like one of the most interesting things about demoing this and using it every day like I do, because we change it every 3 weeks, little things change every now and then. So nothing, we don't move your cheese very often. It's not major changes that frighten you. We once changed the entire user interface, and that was, whoa, that was a big change. We're not going to do one of those again, hopefully. But, we change little bits, and every time I come in, I find little new secret features, little new shortcuts, so it's great. So I'm going to create some stories. So let's do, create MVC site as a story, a product backlog item that we want to do. We're going to create an automated build next. I've not spelt it right. I'll fix that in a second. If we get time, let's create a Java build, because you can do Java builds in Azure as well, and you don't have to just build .NET stuff. Deploy a website to Azure. Well, that sounds a bit complicated. And then let's set up continuous deployment. Well, can I spell continuous? There's the question. If I was running on Windows 8, I would have a nice handy spell checker, but I'm not, so I don't. Okay. There we go. Okay, well, that looks a bit complicated. So let's go through these. And this is my backlog. You saw as I was typing it. I've never been interrupted here, but it's actually going. It's a proper Ajax website. It does server calls in the back end, but it keeps very responsive. So creating an MVC website, that's pretty easy. So let's just say, one story point. That's like the most basic thing you can do. I did that before you walked in. Create an automated build. Well, first of all, we need to spell check it. So let's come here. Create automated. That'll do. Build. That sounds a bit harder because I can't spell it, but I know I've done it before. It's not too hard. We'll say 2 story points. Now, here's a shortcut for you. Quite often, you're using a web application. Web applications, when they get really good, you think, wow, this is a good web application. You kind of forget you're in a browser. So you go to save a work item, you hit Control S, and you get that really annoying browser save HTML, and you go, oh, I'm in the web browser. Oh, no, not here. You hit Control S, it saves the work item for you. Just little things like this that we notice people doing wrong because from looking at how they're using the website, and we can improve and fix and ship those fixes in the on-premise product as well. So 2 story points. Create a Java build. Well, never done that live on stage before, so we'll say we only enabled that in the previous sprint, so we'll give that 5 because that sounds pretty hard. It's actually not too bad. Yes, sir? So the question was, on the backlog priority, we have a number here, yes. And can you change that? Yes, you can. The default number for the backlog priority. I'll show you how the backlog priority bit works in a second. So let's do the effort thing, and then we'll do priority. So we'll come in here. We'll deploy a website to Azure, 2 story points, and then quickly set up continuous deployment. You want to do 5 story points. Okay. So we've got those there. And if we switch on forecast lines, we can see that currently the order of priority we have for them, we're not going to get time to do the continuous deployment here in the demo. I'd really quite like to show that to you. So let's drop creating the Java build down below continuous deployment. And then we've reordered the backlog there, and that's changed the backlog priority. To the gentleman's question, if I look at actually the numbers here, those numbers are, we actually assign those numbers across a big spread of integers. You can customize that in the process template settings for the on-premise, but for the cloud, you have to go with kind of the number we've put there. But if you change this and say, if you went here and did, let's make that, say, 10. Let's make, I used to do basic programming as a kid, so it's always good to do 10, 20. There we go. I'm just trying to keep them in order quickly. Well, in fact, let's do it wrong. Let's take that 2. And then, so that's going to bump it up to the top. And then continuous deployment. I've set that to 50. Oh, no. Hit save. And then when we reorder the Create MVC site, I did it too. Hang on, let's just hit. Did that do that right? Let's just hit refresh just to make sure. I don't want to get a big error coming in here. Okay, yeah, oops, there we go. So deploy website to Azure. If I can't do that before I've done the before I've set up done a continuous automated build, so I'm going to drag that down. If I now look at the backlog priority of that, it actually slots it in, but directly between 30 and 40. So it tries to be smart about where it does it and respect the way you've done your conventions. But by default, we stick in some numbers there, just to numbers are numbers. Okay, and it actually if it couldn't fit in. In as 35, it would actually bump all the stories below it. It would actually increase the backlog priority of those numbers down as well, and it makes room. It works. Great. So we've done that. Right, that looks like enough work to fit into a sprint based on my velocity of 10, which is just what my team typically use. Maybe my team, suddenly we found out we're able to do 15 stories in a sprint. I could just change here, change the priority, but no, we like it there. So let's chuck that stuff in the sprint one. If you wanted to learn more about customizing these agile settings, actually, there's a session, I'll find it for you. There's a session that Ewald Hoffman's giving about customizing the process template. Oh, there you go. We can watch the video on it. It was this morning. So, yeah, there we go. So I've added those stuff to Sprint 1. Click on Sprint 1. And then we can see those are the stories I've added into my sprint. So now I can do some, let's set some capacities for the team. So Bill Gates, you know, is a busy chap now. So I'm going to say capacity per day. We'll give him, you know, maybe he's got an hour a day to spend on my team. Maybe less than that. Let's give him zero. Brian Keller, however, he's a good friend. He can do 4. Jason, again, he's another busy guy. He can only spend five capacity per day. And we deliberately aren't defining a unit here. When you're on, it's in hours, typically. When you're doing your on-premise product, you can customize exactly what that word says and what that word does and what that word means. We're just giving it a capacity. So we'll do that. If we wanted to, we could add some vacation time, but I'm just going to leave it at that. Come back to here. And now we've got all our team members, and we can see what work they're assigned. And we can actually now do some task planning. So create an MVC site and just say, you know, create site, save and close. And maybe we want to, modify the theme or something like that. We can just do all that sort of stuff and blah, 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 blah. Go through. We'll just create a couple of little tasks here. We probably actually want to, while we're here, give it some remaining work, well, 0, backlog, because I don't have anything left to do on that. We'll close that in a second. But the modify the theme, well, that always takes a lot longer than you think, so we'll give that 16 hours and, remaining. We'll just go, you know, create a couple of things here. And you can see as I'm doing this, it's increasing the work that we are allocating to our team. We'll just add a couple of tasks in here quickly. There we go. So there we are. So, and you can, if you go back to the, if you look at the individual work item, if you go to the, we can go here to task, you can actually see that it's creating work item links. You have a hierarchy of links in a work item between each other. Question, sir? Yes, the question was, can you create work items using Excel? Great question. Yes, you can. All the Excel integration, the Microsoft Project integration, the Eclipse integration, the Microsoft Test Manager integration, they're all cloud-enabled in the TFS 2012 release. We also went back and cloud-enabled not just Excel and blah, 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 but Visual Studio 2010, Visual Studio 2008, heck, VB6 you can get a patch for, so it's cloud-enabled and can sort to TFS Preview. So, yeah, we make sure you can use whatever IDE, MATLAB, you can go use and talk to TFS Preview if you want to. So, great question. Yes, sir. The question was, is there a relationship between the effort in the user story and the capacity against the tasks? No. The product backlog items and user stories are measured in story points. So by default, so you know, a number. We use the Fibonacci sequence as a way of doing hours. So it's an order of magnitude complexity. Because when you're at the, and this is more of an agile, you know, thing, but when you're at the story estimation model, your estimate story is going to be very soft because you haven't worked out exactly what work is there. So by using story points, your estimates, if you gave an hour estimate, would be plus or minus 40% anyway, typically. So by using story points, you're not forcing your team to think in hours. You're making them think in which stories are harder than others, what are the orders of magnitude of hardness. And then once we go into task planning, which is done in a sprint, and that's where you're much closer to the implementation now of that story, and you can go through and give our estimates as to, you know, how long I think this is going to take me to do for tasks. Exactly. You can completely forget about it, yeah. Yeah, the effort in the sprint... Exactly. No, you don't do any of that. You just forget about it. The effort you gave to the story was useful for your sprint planning. So, you know, have I roughly got enough room to fit this into my sprint? If I look back into my backlog, if I go back to my product backlog, then, you know, when am I going to get to the feature that I need to get to before I can ship RTM, like create the billing system, you know? Oh, well, that's going to take me up to sprint 37. Wow. I maybe need to pull out some of these other sprints. And it allows, because I'm a product owner for my particular area of TFS, allows me as a product owner to balance up investments and decide which features we might cut so that we can pull in a feature we really need and those sorts of things. Yeah. Yes, correct. You have an idea, but yeah, when you're looking at the sprint, you're more worried about have we got enough capacity to do the work we've said we're going to try and do in this sprint. When you get through sprint planning, you normally find actually no. So then you normally say, well, which story are we going to pull out? And you can make that decision then based on the fact of, you know, which one you need to pull out based on how much work is actually given. Okay, so let's move on. So as well as this, we've obviously, as well as this, you know, capacity planning, agile planning, we've also got a full task board that's enabled in the web. So you can come onto here. And again, this is web enabled. So create site, I've already done that. So I can drag, drop that, move it over to the done side. And it actually goes and updates that work item, marks it as done. This one here, test two, well, that's not particularly good. So let's actually add another task while I'm here. I've create build, and then we'll assign it a remaining work of, say, 4. Hit save and close. That's going to put a new sticky note on my task board. I'm going to go work on that now, and I'm going to assign it to me. And this is typically the view that we use during our daily stand-up meetings where we're moving story cards around and explaining to the team what we're working on. Brilliant. As well as this, we have all the old, you know, remember all the work item tracking views you've seen? We still have those, obviously, in Visual Studio and the web, Visual Studio and Eclipse. But we also have them in the web, and we completely rewrote web access for TFS 2012. So here's the shiny new web access. I currently have only one task assigned to me, but if I go in and I look at my product backlog, we can see all the backlog items here. If I look in the current sprint, so let's have a look at the sprint backlog. There we go. And if I, let's just make this a bit bigger. So, and I can, again, I mentioned things like keyboard shortcuts. If I use my cursor keys, you know, it just works and loads fairly quick. There you go, you see. It's actually fairly speedy. I can go down, up, down. It just works. If I can make several changes, so I can create automated build, I can modify theme, I can do that. I can do a bunch of changes, and I can hit save and do them all in one go if I wanted to. It's a proper interactive web application. Here's a little feature for you as well. We added this little up-down button, and a bit of feedback I had actually in a Radio TFS podcast episode was somebody said, well, these shortcuts like cursor keys and things, they're not very discoverable, are they? And we're like, ah. You've got a point. So we came in and we added little tooltips that are, you know, you can do Alt-P and Alt-N if you want to, and, you know, some extra keyboard shortcuts and try and help you discover those shortcuts. What we want to do is let's favorite this query, because I always want to come back to the sprint backlog. So I'm going to add it to my favorites, and that way I don't need to go digging around for that query. It appears here. The favorites are synchronized between Visual Studio, Eclipse, and the cloud, in the web. So they're stored on the web and synchronized everywhere. Your favorites stay the same. Question? Oh, the sprint field there in that column. If we wanted to change that query and add a new column to it, we can come in here. And that's because it's the current sprint, so it's not that useful. But say we actually wanted to know what the sprint is. So we say iteration path. And we can come in here. We can add that to the query. We can move that up there. And then we can decide, well, is that the query I want to have? Or is that a query that I want to share with my team? Maybe I want to have that. There you go. It's iteration path. This bit here. It's okay. There we go. Well, it was a good question, though, because I got to show another feature. So that's good. So there we go. We have the iteration path. So I've added that in, and I can customize all my queries. You can do all the same stuff you do with TFS and just do full customization. Okay. So now I've added that as a personal favorite. Maybe I want the... what was the one I was looking at before? Maybe I want one which is just, my work items. So let's just do a quick new query, and we'll say retrieving work. Let's just do a new query, and we'll say work item type is equal to any, and state equals any, and assigned to is equal to me. At me. There we go. Hit save, save query as. I'm going to save it as a team query because I want to show you a good feature, shared queries. So my work items, hit save. That's now there. I can now add that as a team favorite. And when I do that, that actually appears back in my home page here. There you go. It appears as a little tile. And I'll show you a feature of those tiles in a second that, again, is going to appear in RTM, but is in TFS preview first already. Notice we get a little burn down chart. It's not very busy at the moment because we're on our first day of the sprint. We get a little sprint capacity dialog. If that goes red, you know that we've got more work allocated than we're going to do in our sprint, that sort of thing. So let's come through here. Let's go. We've done enough time on that. So we're just going to... The next thing we're going to do is create a build. So I've checked this in. I want to now do build automation. That was my next task on my story list. So I'm going to do a new build definition. And just like when you're talking to an on-premise Team Foundation server, I come in here, create my build definition. The first thing you tell it is about your build, what you want it to be called. You then give it a trigger, when you would like the build to happen. I'm going to say I want it to be a daily build. And I want the system to build at 7 o'clock in the morning, just before my team come in, so that way in the morning we've got a nice fresh build waiting for us. That's great. I want to go to my workspace, tell it what I'm building. So I'm building Hello World TE. It's figured that out automatically for me because I have a solution open inside Visual Studio. I'm going to give it some build defaults. Now, look at this. This is cool. Build controller. Normally, you have to install an on-premise build controller, a box under your machine, and point it at TFS. You can still do that and install a box under your machine and point it to the cloud if you want to. It has to be a TFS 2012 build controller. We give you a build controller as part of TFS preview, a hosted one, just there in the cloud. And we do that because we can share these virtual... We have a pool of empty virtual machine images that are all set up with Visual Studio 2010 installed, the build agent installed. And when you kick off a build, well, let's kick one off because it takes a little while and I can talk through what it's doing. But we actually go do the build for you in the cloud, which is pretty cool, so you don't need any hardware at all. What you want to build, and then some retention policy stuff. So that's the same as doing the build on-premise. It's going to create the build for me. It's going to appear over here. Wow, that was slow. Not normally that slow. There we go. Right-click. I'm just going to queue the build to make sure it works. And I'm going to explain what that's doing. So we see, notice for a little while, it's in a queue. That's because it's waiting for a build agent to be allocated to it. So out of the pool, it said to the TFS preview, hey, give me a build server. It then goes, gets one out of the queue. Once it gets one, it takes that controller, establishes a virtual machine, connects it to your project. It then downloads the source code onto that server, runs your build, runs your unit tests, packages the project to how you want, and it then checks in the files from the build into the location in source control that I specified. On-premise, when you do a build, it puts things on a Windows file share, because Windows file shares are great on-premise, perfect. You don't have a Windows file share in the cloud. Accessing them is quite tricky, so it actually checks those into a drops folder in source control. Yes, sir? You can change the process template. Yeah, so the question was, can you change the process template? You actually can. If I go here, it's just the same. Now, this is confusing because I've been saying editing process template. You can't do. You can edit the build process template. So you just come in here and say build defaults, process. Give it a second just to bring it up. Sorry, it's trying to... There we go. And you can actually come in here and do a new one and point at a different one, just like you would do with an on-premise build. So Nino did a session on build automation earlier on in the week, which you can catch if you want to learn more about build stuff. So that's building now. It started. So let's go watch the build. We completely redid the build report views. Again, made them look a bit shinier. And it's currently running and running the test, unit tests. You know now that we support both NUnit as well as MS Test out of the box, and we've got a plugin model for third-party test providers as well. That all just works. And so without installing anything, I've got my code checked into the cloud. I'm doing a build in the cloud, and I'm getting my results pushed up to me in source control in the cloud. Pretty cool. If I can take that question with you offline, because there's a big list that we can go through. There's things like the Azure SDKs up there already, but some production versions and stuff. But let's take that one offline and we'll go through. Okay, and then the build succeeded. Woohoo! Great. So the project's working. Fantastic. We've done everything right. Now that's good. That's interesting. Who was in the keynote, Scott Guthrie? And you saw about the new Azure website stuff? Which is a really easy way of taking your ASP.NET website and having it deployed into the cloud. Well, if you notice, it was part of a demo. I like to call this the demo that Scott Goo didn't do. So he didn't do it in the keynote. And he went, blah, 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 you can publish from TFS. Okay, moving on. Let's show you that bit. He was saving it for me, I like to think. So we're coming in. Here's a list of my Azure websites. You notice here, again, another plug for the podcast. There's the podcast there running in Azure. But let's create a new website. So we'll say new website, and we'll say quick create, and we'll call this TE2012. Let's just see if somebody's bound to have grabbed that one. Oh, no, it hasn't. It had a little green tick against it. Great, let's grab it. So let's domain squat that. So create website. So this is going to go into Azure, and it's going to allocate a website for me to deploy into called te2012.windowsazure.com. Windows Azure website, sorry, azurewebsites.net, rather. So that's created it for me there. Let's go look at it. And then you notice when we come in here, it actually has set up TFS publishing. That sounds interesting. Let's click on that, see what it does. And we're going to connect that to our project. I still luckily have it in my... Oh, no, I don't have it in my clipboard anymore. Damn it. Okay, let's go into here. TE2012. Oh, that's easy. Wow, we actually got some good ones for our little session here. When I'm doing my dry runs, I have to think of like names I don't want to use when I'm doing the real one, just so I don't use them up in the test. So let's do this. We'll hit authorize now. That's actually going to connect to your Windows, your TFS preview account using OAuth, and it's going to set up an OAuth trust relationship between Windows Azure and TFS. So there's no need to like share passwords between things and share credentials. We're actually just setting up an OAuth trust. You can break that OAuth trust between TFS and Azure anytime from either side if you want to. So it's found my Contoso project, and it says, that's a project I want to push, please. Now, this is actually quite clever. It's quite clever and quite scary at the same time, because what it's going to do is it's going to look into my project in TFS, and it's going to look for a website solution file. And by default, the first one it finds is going to say, well, I think you probably want to publish that one. So it picks it, but it doesn't publish it yet, okay? So we're going to go and have a look at the one it picked. It's fine if you've only got one website in there, so it works really great for a demo. But in terms of production use, you probably want to go through and double check that. So we'll come in here, and if we want, we can click on this, and it would actually open up Visual Studio for us if we wanted to. But let's go back to TFS, and we'll notice if I hit refresh here, what it did, we had our nightly build. It's actually gone and created for me a continuous integration build. I can rename that. I can edit those settings if I want to. But let's go and have a quick look at that build, just so I can show you what it's done. It's using, it's set up a name. We can change the name if wanted. It set the configure to be continuous integration. We can change that if we wanted, make it be a manual build or whatever. It's from the workspace, right. It's using the hosted build controller. It's doing the drops, right. And if we look at the process, we'll actually notice it's picking a process template of Azure Continuous Deployment, which has got all the bits in to be able to deploy to Azure. And so you can see, and it has a bunch of settings in here, like, you know, where do you want to deploy to? What are you deploying, which is this solution file. And, you know, it's quite simple, but yeah. So there we go. And if you wanted to change a bunch of stuff and have the ability to do staging automatically, but then, you know, a promotion as a thing you do manually, then you can do that as well. But I'm just going to do a simple continuous deployment. So that all looks good. So, hey, let's just right-click and let's just queue it. So I'm now going to hit queue build and we'll see what happens. This is going to take my standard ASP.NET 4 website that I built. I just did file new ASP.NET website. I was running it in my local, you know, F5 works retreat. I'm now going to, I've checked it into the cloud. I've built it in the cloud. And now hopefully, fingers crossed, it's going to deploy it into the cloud for me. So the only thing I'm doing locally is actually editing those files. Everything else is just happening in servers. I'm currently not paying anything for because I've got a 3-month trial subscription to Windows Azure. And that trial lasts for a while and gives you 10 test accounts to play with. TFS preview we're not charging for right now either, so it's pretty good value. It's a good way to learn anyway, that's for sure. So that's currently in the queue. Again, it's waiting a build agent to be allocated to it. Again, when they do these in keynotes, you know, they twist a little dial and give the guy extra, you know, speedy resources, but they don't do that for me because I'm not very important. So come in here, and it includes that build request. It's actually in progress now, so let's go watch that build running. And that's going to do the build. So while that's running, let's just do some recap slides, and we'll come back and we'll see, hopefully, the build's deployed in a second. So we had some great questions there. I put some slides up with some of the points just to make sure we didn't forget anything. So, yeah, in terms of the preview, the value, one of the reasons why we get away to our management of TFS preview being free right now, we've had unbelievably good feedback from everyone that's using it already, and thank you very much to people that are. People that aren't yet, please get on there and give us your feedback. The level of feedback we've had of this release of TFS, we've never had as much feedback on a pre-release version of TFS ever in all the 7 years I've been working on TFS, which is the entire lifetime of TFS. So I'm really, really confident about the quality of this first TFS release because of all the feedback we've been having of it being used in production. You are supported to go live. We provide support via the forums. There's email contacts as well. You know, we take support very seriously. Actually, when you see the go live support listed, that's quite often it's because we're in pre-release. So the product team actually handles a lot of the support itself because it wants to make the product better. So you probably get through to the product team quicker when things are in pre-release mode than once we've released them because you don't have to go through, you know, first tier support. FizzBuzz, have you switched it off, switch it back on again, that sort of thing. Actually, our support team are very, very, very good, and they're excellent guys, and they generally get you up and running very, very quickly. We upgrade the data automatically. We upgrade the server every 3 weeks. We bring your data and upgrade it with us. We're aiming for, you know, 99.9% uptime. We don't always achieve that because we're learning. That's what we're aiming for, but, you know, best effort uptime. We're actually aiming. My boss hates SLAs with a passion because SLAs are your book covering measure, is what he says. And, you know, they're when you get the lawyers involved is when you get below an SLA in a commercial service. Our goal is 100% uptime. And if Brian were here, he'd just whack me on the head and remind me of that. We aim for 100% uptime. We will financially guarantee when people can pay for the service, we will financially guarantee a 99.9% uptime. If we don't achieve that, we give you money back. And we will charge in the future. The charging will be competitive. We'll probably have a mixture of free models versus commercial models, but we haven't decided. Questions, sir? We'll talk about that in a sec. People always want to know the difference between server and service. So the main one is you've got no setup with the service, and you can collaborate easily. I should have probably had a red mark. It's on the internet. So if you're not comfortable with the internet, then use on-premise server. If you are comfortable with using on the internet, then use the service. You don't get lab management yet. And then SharePoint and the reporting services. There is no reporting services yet in Azure that we can use. As soon as there is, we'll hook into that. But at the minute, there's no reporting other than the little, you know, charts and reports we put into the TFS itself. And then the SharePoint integration isn't there. If you want that, you want on-premise. Also, identity is the biggest issue, I find, if you're happy with an identity being a live ID. Quite often, that's a showstopper. As I mentioned, live IDs. The network, so the data is encrypted over the wire. You're enforced to run on HTTPS. You actually can't not run on HTTPS. So we enforce that. However, just so you know, data is not encrypted at rest in SQL Azure. Data is, you know, it's stored in the database. It's physically secured. There are only four people in the world that would ever be able to get access to that data if you gave them explicit permission. Those four people have all had security background checks as well, so when you do give them permission to look at customer data, they can and won't sell it to anyone. But, the data is not encrypted at rest. I wanted to highlight that, and that is because that's the way SQL Azure works. It also is how we get a bunch of really good scale stuff as well. And then geolocation. Currently, it's in the US data center. One of the gentlemen here asked this question. In the future, we will be able to allow you to choose your data center location. And then the thing, we do lots of testing, as you would expect. My rule of thumb, every time you increase the load on a website by a factor of 10, things happen that you weren't expecting. Just crazy stuff happens. People always react, like real people react differently to your scaling tests. So there's no place like production. We are learning. It's one of the reasons for us doing TFS preview. It allows us to iterate fast and allows us to tweak things and improve things as we go along. We talked about SLA, redundancy, as you would expect. We've got a bunch of hardware supporting this. But it's actually interesting because when you occasionally when I've been on deployment calls, you know, we have a big conference call for doing the deployment. You see the guys managing TFS service. They're in the same Windows Azure portal that you go to manage Windows Azure stuff. We don't have any magic stuff. We're using the same public services, same public interfaces that you guys all use. And then we have the monitoring stuff you might have heard about earlier in the week. And then, yeah, we'll talk about this in a second, which was your question, sir. But one of the things I wanted to do was come back to here, because this is cool. My build succeeded a little while ago, actually, but I didn't notice. So build succeeded, great. Well, what does that mean? If I go to my Windows Azure portal, we can actually see it's already showed us we have an active deployment. So if I can't quite remember my URL, so let's scroll down here. If I go look at my website, click on that URL. If anyone's got their laptops open, they can also go to that URL because this is live on the internet in the cloud. It's just compiling it. Come on, work. Come on. See? Let's do it. Yay! There we go. Building in the cloud. Source code in the cloud. Building in the cloud. Planning in the cloud. Deploying to the cloud. And let's just do... Thank you. Yeah, you can clap. Thank you. Wow, it worked. Brilliant. Let's just... Let's just say... Thank you. And then we'll do that there. Control-C. Again. Back to home controller. Let's say it there. Say thank you. I'm just going to quickly do a check-in, and then we'll watch, you know, magically everything happens while we go back and do stuff. So pending changes. Let's just hit check-in now. So I'm going to check in two items. Yep, that's checked in. And then when I go back to my build, I should actually associate that with the work item, because all the good stuff about Team Foundation Server, where you have, you know, source code associated with work items, associated with builds, all that goodness is still there. So from your live production deployment, you can see exactly which changes were made to it and what work items were linked to those changes and, you know, why those changes were made. So let's look at our builds. And we can actually see already there'll be a continuous integration build queued up, ready to run and deploy this next version of this website live into production, which is pretty scary, but cool. So at the minute, the only way to get into TFS is to start afresh, just to do a check-in, take latest. We will give you the ability to move in. It says soon. That actually does work in the very, very, very latest release of the TFS integration platform, as long as you install Team Explorer 2012 on the machine. Question, sir? So the question was the build, can you find it in TFS Preview? Great question. Yeah, it drops all the build results into what's called the drop folder, and it stores those drop results in source control. We govern as part of the build definition where it stores them. But if I go here into my drops folder, we can actually see for Hello World TE, for the continuous deployment one, there it is, and there's the actual website that was deployed. Download it and deploy it locally. No, the question was, does it overwrite as you do a new build? It actually doesn't. It respects what's called a retention policy. So if we go to here and we do edit build definition, you tell it how many builds you want to leave. So I've currently got the last 10 successful. I can increase that if I want to say the last, or I can decrease that and say only keep the last 5. But maybe I want to go into a build controller here and say, you know that the... completed, hit refresh. That build there, that was actually quite good. So that build quality is, That build quality is maybe, you know, released or something like that. And I want to right-click on this and retain indefinitely. So I don't want it to be automatically deleted. Otherwise, it will respect the retention policy. Yes, you can do all this. Sorry, the question was, can you see it through the web? Yes, you can do... Oh, no, that's my live production. That's how many bugs we've got in TE at the minute. You don't need to see that. Okay, there we go. I can come in here. I can go to my builds in the web. And then I can do exactly all those same things I was doing. You know, I can. In fact, we can see that the build successfully deployed. So if I go back to here now and hit refresh, then it should hopefully say thank you. Hey, look at that. Magic. There we go. Thank you. So we will allow you to migrate progress in future. Being able to migrate TFS to TFS, the hardest problem there is actually around identities, again, and swapping your Active Directory identities over to live IDs and things like that, but we'll get there. The SourceSafe upgrade wizard we have that we're shipping, so you can upgrade SourceSafe projects and point them at the cloud, and it just works as well. So that works already. I've been trying that recently. And then we've got some hybrid scenarios we want to help enable, but they're lower down the backlog. The first one is getting data in, but more importantly, getting data out. If we start charging for TFS Preview, and you know, while we'll have like Azure free and a commercial side, if you decide you don't want it, we need to allow you to get your data out again before we can start charging, because otherwise that's not fair. So we will do that. And then upgrade, we do all that stuff. Compatibility, yeah, we mentioned this. One of the gentlemen asked me this question. You can talk from older versions of Visual Studio and older versions into TFS in the cloud. You need to install what's called the forward compatibility patch, which basically adds the cloud bit, you know, the cloud authentication bit to it. Okay, we have just over a minute. We've been taking questions long. Any other questions? But otherwise, people also can feel free to start ducking out here, and I'm going to leave my contact details up so you can reach me. So, yes, sir?
Building installers
using
Wix files also...
The question was, building installers using Wix, is that supported? Yes, it is. I need to check. I don't think we currently have a version of Wix pre-installed on the... build agents, because it's iterating quickly, but you can check in the Wix dependencies and have them as part of the build and do that. So you can do Wix builds as part of it and create ISO images and as well, you know, if you want to do that, as well as MSI files. Question from you, and then we'll... The question was, will we only support live ID or will we integrate with TFS? Initially, for the Go Live, we're looking at Live ID. We do use what's called ACS, Azure Credential Services. That supports ADFS. So we will enable it. We're looking at enabling ADFS at some point in the future. Quite frankly, getting ADFS working requires a lot of plumbing on your side as well. So one of the reasons why we're focusing Live ID to begin with, but ADFS is very, very interesting to us, as is other internet, federated internet credentials that ACS can support, you know, like Facebook IDs and Google IDs and what have you, Yahoo IDs, that sort of thing. So great question. The question was, can you use the API for TFS? Yes, you can. The tricky bit comes around authentication, because quite often when you if you're building an interactive application that talks to people, that's fine because it will actually pop up a dialogue. But quite often you don't want to pop up a dialogue. You want to do it as a service. Azure Credential Services, which we talked about, supports a thing called service identities. If you come see me afterwards, there is actually one of our MVPs produced a little utility for you that you can go and create a service credential for yourself. We don't have any UI for that in the website. We're going to have it. But we'll do it so you can create what's called a service credential. And that's a bit like the equivalent of a network service user, but for the cloud. And then you can pass in that service credential into your API. You'd have a connection bit of the API and use the service credential string instead, which is a better way of doing it for service stuff. But yeah, the API is fully supported against the cloud. Both the .NET API and the Java API are both fully supported against the cloud. If you want to have a look at some of these hands-on labs and learn more about TFS, that's great. Also remember if you search for Brian Keller VM, anyone needs a link to that, if you come down to the booth now, I can send you over to it. That'll actually enable you to download a virtual machine that contains not just TFS pre-installed with Visual Studio, but also all the hands-on labs for you. Okay, and then extra resources, blah, blah, blah. Don't forget your evals. Ryan, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you this morning. Thank you. Hope you have a good week.